Hey friends, welcome to the Rhythms Podcast. Once again this week, it's great to have you here. This is the podcast that invites us to take another look at the ordinary rhythms of our lives and how they create extraordinary, thriving lives wherever we live, work, and play. I'm Paul Gaucher, and again, it's great to have you along. This is episode 7, and I'm calling this one Connected, as in relationally connected. But first, a bit of an update from the sabbatical. We've been on the Sabbath road, which sort of seems like an oxymoron to say it that way in some ways. But anyway, we've been on this journey for a little more than 2 weeks, and we're having a good time. And we're in Virginia, and we're granding. Nancy Lee and I are in the lives of our family here, our granddaughters, our daughter and son-in-law, and we're having a great time. But along the way, people that I'm running into here and there are asking me about my sabbatical and what it is and what it isn't. And first of all, what it isn't, sabbatical isn't a vacation. It's not a three-month holiday for me. It's not time off. What it is an opportunity to experience a whole new set of rhythms in my daily life. This is very intentional, to look at things differently, to hear things differently, to touch and taste and even smell things differently. It's really about different, doing different and being different. In my application for the Lilly Grant, which funds this sabbatical, I wrote this about my purpose, my goal, my intention for this time. And here's what I wrote. My expectation and hope for this sabbatical, indeed what will truly make my heart sing, is not just that I will get to spend time differently than I do normally, but rather that I will return to ministry at Prince of Peace, deeply renewed, restored, and fully spirited, to do far differently what I normally spend time doing. The long-lasting benefits that this sabbatical provides me and the community of faith at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church are the gifts of time and space to become fully aware of both the Chronos and the Kairos time in every moment, and to be fully present and alive to all that awaits us as we step into the future together. So I know that sounds a bit, probably a bit academic, or sounds like something someone would write for an application for a different time. But that's what I've been sharing with people about this sabbatical, and that it's not just that I will get to spend time differently than I normally do, but I'm looking forward to returning to do far differently what I normally spend time doing. So ponder that. Anyway, there's great benefit in doing and being in different rhythms, and that's what this is all about. And, you know, this different rhythm of life must be sort of working, and here's how I know that. Last week, after I recorded the last podcast on the creative rhythm, I sent it off to Darren, who, as I love to say about what he does, makes good things sound great. So Darren engineers the audio. He adds the bumper music on the front and at the end and squeezes it all into a pleasantly listenable file and then sends it off to Lisa, who posts it on the website and in iTunes. The day after I sent last week's podcast to Darren, he sent me a text to let me know that he'd gotten it and that it was on its way to being posted. But then he added this. In the text message back to me, he wrote, "Hey, Paul, 34 minutes on the podcast, and your sabbatical voice is so much more relaxed sounding. Your sabbatical voice is so much more relaxed sounding." That was endlessly intriguing to me. I had no idea that my voice could become more relaxed sounding than I thought it was. And I think that's one of the more important reasons for intentionally switching things up and stepping away from the rhythms that normally move us through our days. Because when we do that, when we do things differently, things empty out, which creates some room for margin and space and breath and oxygen, which then makes it possible to fill that space back up with a whole new set of healthy rhythms. Who knew? Anyway, some thoughts from the Sabbath Road. But this week, we're into the third rhythm, exploring the rhythms of what it means to be connected. And as you know, for each rhythm, there's a kind of narrative statement. And the narrative statement that I've come up for the connected rhythm is this: we thrive as connected people by nurturing healthy relationships, practicing intentional acts of kindness, and showing hospitality as ways of creating trust and building respect, which sustains community. That's some good stuff right there. Anyway, this rhythm, the rhythm of connectedness, is all about relationships. Relationships with others that we know and love. Relationships with others that we may not know so well or not at all. Relationships with people in other parts of the world. People whose names we'll never know, whose faces we'll never see, whose stories we'll never get to hear. Relationships, though, that we have to other parts of the created order are important. Relationships to our home. Relationships to our property, relationships to things on a small scale, and relationships to things on a global scale. Basically, the questions that this rhythm, the rhythm of connection, asks are these: how can we nurture healthy relationships? And what are some intentional acts of kindness that we can practice that will move our lives toward thriving relationally? And how does showing hospitality create trust, build respect, and sustain community on every level and of every kind? So what I want to do in this time together is I want to tell you three stories and then draw some conclusions and ask some questions. First, I want to talk about the Saturday morning that shifted nearly everything for me. The Saturday morning that shifted just about everything for me, and it happened in a McDonald's drive-thru. Second, I want to talk about why my mom always carried a pack of gum, a harmonica, and a pocket-sized Bible in her purse. And thirdly, I want to talk about how a walk across the room and past the salad bar changed everything for at least a couple of guys in a high school. So first, the Saturday morning that shifted everything for me. The importance of embracing the rhythm of connectedness became really clear to me several years ago when I was working at a church in southern Minnesota. I was on a youth trip. I was leading a youth trip. It was a Saturday morning, and our youth director, my good friend and colleague, and now a pastor, Paul Dean, and I were counting the kids as they rolled out of the hotel and got onto the bus. Well, during that loading process, while standing in the parking lot next to the McDonald's, I began to hear someone yelling obscenities from the adjacent parking lot. I mean, real, full bore, full on obscenities that were backed up with the kind of anger that really began to concern me. So I stepped around the front of the bus to get a better look at what was going on. And I saw a car in the McDonald's drive-thru, and I realized that it was the driver in the car in the drive-up at the drive-up window, whom I could see, who was screaming at the top of his lungs at the employee through the drive-thru window, whom I could not see. As I started to walk toward all of this crazy, ugly commotion, the car in the drive-thru sped off and disappeared into an otherwise beautiful Saturday morning. There weren't any other cars in the drive-thru, so I walked up to the window and I looked in, and what I saw was a small group of McDonald's employees huddling around one of their coworkers, the one who was made to bear the brunt of that ugly experience. And it was almost a group hug. Five or six others, workers, had all left their posts at the French fry fryer, the burger griddle, the egg McMuffin maker, whatever, and they were all standing around this young person, some with hands on her shoulders and others simply hugging her as she cried. Well, not wanting to butt in or interrupt, but I felt like I needed to check things out. So I asked if everything was okay. And it was then that the manager turned toward me and said, yes, everything was fine and she was doing okay. But what he told me next revealed that everything was not okay and left me wondering how anyone could be okay in this kind of situation. The driver in the car in the drive-thru was angry with the young girl at the window after she had given him his order and his change. As the manager went on to tell me, the order was just fine. But the young girl, actually probably just 16 years old, give or take, had accidentally made an error with the change due back to the driver. "Wow," I said. "Must have been quite an error based on his reaction." "Well," said the manager, and then he looked at me with that, "you're really not going to believe this," kind of look. The manager looked at me and said, "It was only 11 cents. She missed the correct change back by 11 cents. So this young girl was verbally assaulted over an 11-cent error. There's a well-known phrase that often comes to mind at moments like this. When people deliberately, willfully, actively say something or do something that hurts another human being, we say, "Hurt people, hurt people." So on the way back to the bus load of my own young people, now looking on from the distance, of course, I was trying to get my heart around the pain and anguish that the young woman was experiencing. But I also couldn't help wonder what kind of pain and anguish it is that stirs up the kind of pain and anguish that causes someone to treat someone else like that. I'm not naive. I do know what kind of world we're living in. And that's precisely why I'm at work in this whole Rhythms project. But I also know this: hurt people hurt people. Neither the driver of the car nor the young woman whom the driver had verbally abused had any sense of thriving in those moments. How could they? Yet the connectedness, the relationships between those McDonald's workers began to reorient that young girl back toward her thriving best self. And the thriving began to emerge from the connectedness that she had with her coworkers. Thriving, healthy relationships come from a community that's willing to invest in one another and others for the sake of deeper connectedness. Those caring coworkers that gathered around their wounded sister, they were invested in showing her a deep kind of hospitality. And it's the kind of hospitality that makes us aware of the similarity, at least audibly, between the words hospitality and hospital. While they're different words and they have different meanings, they are similar in the tone and in the sense that the amount of trust and respect, along with an enormous amount of care and compassion, became part of the power of a connected community filled with such deep and rich relationship. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist monk and peace activist, writes some thoughts on this, and he says, "The roots of a lasting relationship are mindfulness, deep listening and loving speech, and a strong community to support you." Mindfulness, deep listening and loving speech, and a loving community to support you. The events of that Saturday morning in the McDonald's drive-thru had a lot to teach a lot of people. Certainly, there was a busload of young people who were watching. There were people who were eating in the McDonald's and could hear what was going on. And certainly the employees who actively affirmed their connectedness with their coworker. Everybody learned the importance of nurturing healthy relationships and how doing so creates a thriving, connected community. Well, a couple of observations and a couple of questions. It seems to me that the more we're surrounded by a community that invests in creating, nurturing, sustaining healthy relationships, the better we'll be able to cope when the wheels come off and the drive-thru blows up. We tend to thrive better when we've got a community to invest in and we have a community that's invested in us. So think about the young girl in the McDonald's and how her coworkers were more than just coworkers for her. They became her community when they literally circled around her at what had to be one of the darkest moments of her work life. If the Spirit breathes life and aliveness into us and creates light where there's darkness, then this group of young people were, we could say, filled with the Spirit. And that Spirit just moved out and around and circled that young girl, and healing began to take place. But think of this. Think about what had to have happened along the way for them to make the leap from schlepping burgers and salting fries and to caring for each other in general and caring for that young girl in particular on such a deep level. There had to be something at work in those people for that to happen. So what do we do with all this? Think about the people that you live with, the people that you work with. Think about the people that you interact with most days. Are those relationships alive with a deepening sense of connectedness? Is there a sense that you're better off because of those people and in your life and their lives are better off because you're in their lives? If so, how did that happen? Because it doesn't happen just accidentally. How did it happen? And if it's not that way, what do you think you can do to deepen those connections with the people that you live with and work with? Take a moment and think about the people you're surrounded by each day. People who may not be family, people that just may serve you in a barista line or at a supermarket or whatever. And how can you enrich the lives of those people, the people that you do not know? Connectedness, it's all about relationship. The second story, I want to tell you why my mom always carried a pack of gum, a harmonica, and a pocket-sized Bible in her purse. Parker Palmer is an American author, an educator, and an activist who focuses on issues in education, community, leadership, spirituality, and social change. Well, he tells one of the most compelling stories of how kindness and hospitality come together to create a profound moment of trust and respect, which creates community. A number of years ago, Parker Palmer was a passenger on a plane that backed away from the gate, taxied to a far corner of the airfield, and then stopped. If you've ever been on a flight that taxied and then stopped for an inordinate amount of time, then you know well the feeling that you feel when the plane stops and you look out the window and you see that you're not on the runway and the engines are winding down. It's a moment of deep, deep disappointment. Well, then the pilot made the announcement over the loudspeaker and he said, "Well, folks, I have some bad news and I have some really bad news. The bad news is that there's a storm front in the west. Denver is socked in and shut down. And we've looked for all kinds of alternatives, and there are none. So we'll be staying right here until things open up. And I'm not sure at all how long that will be. That's the bad news. The really bad news is that we can't return to the gate, and we don't have food on the plane, and it's lunchtime. Well, as you can imagine, everyone on the plane just groaned. Some passengers started to complain and some became angry. But then Palmer said one of the flight attendants did something absolutely amazing. The flight attendant stood up and took the intercom and said, "Hey, everyone, we're really sorry about this. We didn't plan it this way, and really, we can't do much about it. And I know for some of you, this is a big deal. Some of you are really hungry, and you are looking forward to getting some kind of snack, some kind of lunch. Some of you may have medical conditions and really need something to eat. Some of you may not care one way or the other, and some of you may need to skip lunch. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. I have a couple of bread baskets up here in the front of the plane, and what we're going to do is we're going to pass them around, and I'm asking everyone to put something in the basket. Some of you brought a little snack along with you, something to tide you over, just in case something like this happened. Maybe some peanut butter crackers, a candy bar, whatever. Some of you may have some Lifesavers or a pack of chewing gum or whatever. And if you don't have anything edible, you may have a picture of your favorite sunset or, you know, a picture of your family gathering or a spouse or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a bookmark that's inspiring for you or a business card, whatever. You may even have a small toy or a collection of paper clips that you just love, something that you wouldn't mind parting with, at least for a while. So everyone, put something into the basket, and then we'll reverse the process. We'll pass the baskets around the plane again, and everybody can take out what he or she needs. What a great idea. Well, what happened next was completely amazing. The griping stopped. People started to root around in their pockets and their backpacks. Some got up and opened their luggage that was stored in the overhead bins, and they got out boxes of candy and the salami and cheese and a bottle of wine here and there and water here and there. People were laughing and talking. The flight attendant had transformed a group of people who were focused on need and deprivation into a community of sharing and celebration. Everything changed when people began to consider the health and well-being of the community. When they invested in the connectedness that they shared with each other, things began to turn around. Wendell Berry captures the essence of all of this about as well as anyone when he writes in his book, the book entitled That Distant Land, The Collected Stories. Wendell Berry writes this: "We are members of each other, all of us, everything. The difference ain't in who is a member and who is not, but in who knows it and who don't." So a couple of observations and some questions. First, the distance between, "Hey, leave me alone, I just want to watch my movie or read my book," between Minneapolis and Charlotte, North Carolina. The difference between that and, "Hey, my name's Paul. What do you need? You need anything? Is there anything I can help you with?" The distance between those two sentiments is not very far at all. Consider a plane filled with people who, for the most part, don't know one another and really don't give a rip about wanting to know anything about the person they're sitting next to. What has to happen? Just think, what has to happen in order to bring down or at least lower the walls that separate us so that we can build bridges into one another's lives? What has to happen in order for that to take place? Now, I get it. We don't have to sit and chat for 2.5 hours between here and there. Sometimes it's good to just settle into a book or a movie on a flight. I get it. But going back to the McDonald's story, those coworkers came to the help of their friend whom they knew. But how do we thrive as connected people and nurture healthy relationships with those whom we do not know? And what difference would that make? What difference could that make in the way that our planet spins if we were willing to invest in that kind of connectedness with people that we may not know? What happens when we practice acts of intentional hospitality and kindness? I'll tell you what, if my mom had been on that flight, that pack of gum, that harmonica, and maybe even that small pocket-sized New Testament that she packed everywhere she went for moments just like that probably would have come in handy. Connectedness. It's all about relationship. And then the third story, finally, how a walk across the room and past a salad bar changed everything for a couple of guys in a high school. Once upon a time, there was a high school kid. We'll call him Mike. Mike was a football player. At school, Mike sat with the football players. Mike ate football food in the cafeteria, and Mike sat at the football table with his friends. But Mike wasn't only a football player. He wasn't just a football player. Mike came from a family with strong, deeply strong relational understanding. His parents had woven deeply into Mike's heart and life what Jesus taught his disciples near the end of the Gospel of Matthew when we read this: "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me," Jesus said, "and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly, I tell you, none of these will lose their reward." Mike was sitting at the football table eating the football food with his football buddies when he looked across the crowded cafeteria to where, at another table, all by himself, sat a student. Mike had noticed him in the previous days, each day sitting by himself all alone, but now Mike knew it was time to do something. Moved by compassion or something deep in his bones and heart, Mike got up from where he was sitting, and he walked across that crowded room, that cafeteria, to where the other young man sat all alone, and Mike sat down with him. Well, this continued for a few days. Some days later, a couple of the other football players at the football table joined Mike and his new lunch buddy. Where there used to be one, there was now four. A day later, there were several more, and within a few more days, nearly the whole table of football players had migrated across that big, lonely cafeteria, and that one young man's life, who was at one point sitting all alone, his life was changed forever by Mike's decision to invest in the life of that young man, to practice the rhythm of connectedness. Connectedness, relationship. Think about the guiding narrative of this rhythm of connectedness. We thrive as connected people by nurturing healthy relationships, practicing intentional acts of kindness, and showing hospitality as ways of creating trust and building respect which sustains community. I mean, what part of that narrative was not at work in Mike's simple act of walking across the room past the salad bar to change the life of one other human being? Well, a couple of observations, then a couple of questions. First, nurturing healthy relationships by practicing intentional acts of kindness and showing hospitality will be risky for each one of us. Doing those things will demand a cost. Mike had to consider how his actions could be so much stronger than any words he could ever say. Second, creating trust and building respect takes time. Mike made the decision to change tables. It was only after several days, really, who knows how many days or even weeks it took to turn that room around. But Mike did, and the room did get turned around. So a couple of questions. Who do you know who needs a cup of cold water that only you can provide? And if it's true that loneliness is on par and in some cases even more dire than some physical diseases that we talk about every day, who do you know who sits at that far table, eating all alone, aching for some sense of connectedness, some deeper experience with relationship? Who is that person that you know? And what one step or movement can you take or make today to close the gap between disconnection and deeper connection? This is all about learning to thrive as people who are connected to one another and really to the whole created order. And the more we live into the healthy rhythms of connectedness with one another, the more we'll find ourselves thriving each day. So I'd love you to try this. Maybe a couple of mantras, things to just say, remind yourself of when you're sensing a need for connectedness. You can simply say, I am relational, or I am related. I'm related to all things. I'm related to the people around me. I am related. You could say, I am connected to some remarkable people. It's great to be reminded that each of us can be connected to remarkable people. I am relationally connected to a planet full of others with whom I have connection, with whom I have relationship. And the extent to which I'm willing to invest myself in that connectedness is the extent to which my life and our lives together will thrive. Or maybe you could try this. Begin by being both mindful of and grateful for people in your life. Make a list of the 3, 4, 5 most important people in your life. And who are those people that mean the most to you? And who are the people that breathe life and aliveness into you? And ask yourself this, how can I return the favor? How can I give back, or how can I breathe life into their lives so that they sense a deeper thriving? Or maybe you could try this. The next time you're paying for groceries at the checkout counter, or paying for your coffee, or interacting with anyone who serves you, instead of simply saying, hey, thanks, and walking away, and just consider how many times a day that moment happens. Instead of saying thanks and just walking away, just pause, look your server in the eye, and say, hey, thanks for your service today. I appreciate it. And then watch what happens. Yeah. That's going to be amazing. That's going to change a lot of things right then and there for them and for you. Because when we invest in relationships, when we work at deepening and widening our connectedness, things happen. When we nurture healthy relationships with our attention, our kindness, and compassion, the usual rhythms of interaction hum a little different. And when we practice intentional acts of compassion, the usual rhythms of relationships take on a different kind of vibe. When we go out of our way to show hospitality, we begin to create a new kind of trust that builds respect. And when we do that, we create a brand new kind of community that knows what it's like to truly thrive. And that, my friends, is my story, and I am sticking to it. Hey, if you want to just keep up on all of this, you can visit the website, paulgaucher.com. There's a couple of buttons at the bottom. The rhythms button will take you to some blogs. There's the podcast button at the bottom. You can subscribe to the podcast in the iTunes store. And I want you to just join me in thanking a great team of people who make this happen. Lisa, Darren, Sven, and Joel, you guys know who you are and what you do. I am so grateful. And now a blessing for you. As you move through the day, may you thrive as a deeply connected, relational child of the Creator. And may you come to a deeper satisfaction as you practice intentional acts of kindness with those that you know and those that you may not know. May you experience the power of showing the kind of hospitality that creates trust, that builds respect. And may you know that kind of connectedness that sustains the community that we, all of us, share together. And remember the words of Thomas Merton, happiness is not a matter of intensity, but of balance, order, rhythm, and harmony. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll meet you back here soon. Peace.